Born from the need to feel connected to voices strong and uncollected, from island shores to distant lands, we reach across with open hands, lifting every voice higher, stories told side by side, Pacific Hawaii, on air and online, tuning in together, no matter the weather, united we inspire. From the heart of the industry to your home and family, with new tech and legacy, we share our destiny. Lifting every voice higher, stories told side by side, Pacific Hawaii, on air and online. Tuning in together, no matter the weather, united we inspire. Pacifica, we laugh and we learn, we cry and we cheer, though miles apart, we're always near, the same show, the same time, a rhythm, a style. Lifting every voice higher, stories told side by side, Pacific Hawaii, on air and online. Tuning in together, no matter the weather, united we inspire. Pacific Hawaii. Pacific Hawaii, we're all on the line, make this your time. Ooh, lifting every voice higher, stories told side by side, Pacific Hawaii, on air and online. Tuning in together, no matter the weather, united we inspire.
Planet FM 104.6 FM on a Saturday. It is the first weekend of May 2026. Yay, we made it. We made it, didn't we? And we are so pleased to be here with you this afternoon. We do hope you had a wonderful week and are enjoying the weekend. The weather is good and we're very grateful for this opportunity. This is something that has been really, really exciting for us. Oh, camera. See, I keep forgetting. I've been wanting to talk to this very inspirational lady for a long time, and I've been hassling her, I have to admit, for a long time via emails, text messages. I'm sure she's like, I'm going to hang up on this girl, but we're really, truly excited and blessed because to kick off our PW Live podcast for 2026, we have someone who, in my opinion and many other people's opinion, personifies leadership, community service, deeply rooted not only in the wider community but the Pacifica Cook Island community. And she continues to thrive in all the different aspects of work that she has done through governance, through local government, in the church, her faith. And you know, she's been a huge part, it's still a huge part of Hamilton and the Waikato community. And now Auckland is blessed to have her here because she's also playing a very big role here in Auckland, not only with the Auckland City Council, but with the Cook Island Development Agency, correct me if I'm wrong, Marita, who's just been appointed the chair, and she is with us here live in the studio. Ladies and gentlemen, kia ora to Marita Matenga, yay!
Kia ora, Gladys. Awesome to be on the show. Thank you. You're awesome.
And thank you so much for answering our call. You know, it's always for us who are a very small outfit, we're just so grateful when people take the opportunity and say to us, yes, we'll come and do this. We'll be part of your podcast. So we're very grateful. And welcome to Auckland. You're here. And I was saying to Gary when I'd heard on social media that you were heading up this way with your husband, and shout out to your husband who made sure you got here safely. Yes, Tapaki, right. So thank you so much. How's that been?
Yes, Auckland is a big city. You know, coming from Hamilton, you know, nearly 200,000 people, but coming to Auckland with nearly 2 million people is a huge step. Just environmentally wise, it's big, it's huge, but I love it. It's something that's really cool for me that it's, my husband did assure me that he's been very happy living in Hamilton for the last 10 years with us,
nice.
You know, in my hometown. But there's something about watching your husband in his hometown with a bit of a different step and skip. So, you know, I've been enjoying doing that and getting to know his family, my family, and getting to find a new rhythm being in Auckland. But absolutely loving the job. I feel very blessed that I've, you know, have the opportunity to work again in local government, supporting local boards in particular.
Nice.
And, yeah, it's a privilege to be chosen to be in that space again, supporting community, in particular Manurewa and Franklin are the local boards that I'm supporting in my role as a specialist advisor. So, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. And we were talking just before we went to air. We go way back, don't we, Marita?
Yes, we do. back.
We go way back. And
Not too much way back. We're not that old.
No. Oh, no, you're not. But, you know. I'll embrace. So I'm over 50 now, so all good.
Yeah.
My first ever job was with your wonderful organisation in Hamilton, HAMSEA, the Hamilton Cook Island Association, excuse me, run by the late Reverend Cora Tuiti, Grace Mitchell, your wonderful parents, Ede, and the late George Ford. And they hired me to be the coordinator for their sexual health peer education program, Tarapako Health.
Yeah.
My first ever job, it was like, the topic was like, I still remember my dad, he was like, "You're what?" And I was like, "Yes, Dad, I'm going to help the next generation talk about, you know, the birds and the bees." And he's like, "You?" I was like, "Yeah, okay, Dad." And I had the, you know, great fortune of meeting all of you. And the work that you were doing with the Pūnangareo, all that work there that has continued to where it is now, you must be heartened to see just the growth in Hamilton as well.
Yeah, most definitely. Those years were really growing years for me, because I did a bit of a stint as a, I don't know what I was called, youth something in Tarapako Health, where I did a bit of a stint.
But youth educator.
Youth educator, which morphed into so much more than that. And I think you remember your job as well, morphed into something bigger than that. But I think it's those beginnings and being so close and mentored by the Reverend Cora and Grace and my parents, you know, like a lot of those beginnings, so you've got to start somewhere. And for me, I'm grateful for those beginnings, because actually without those beginnings, I wouldn't be the person that I am today. I'm grateful for those learnings. There was some really hard lessons. Like I remember accompanying Papa Kōrero. This was after your time you left.
Yes.
When we had to go and try and encourage ministers of all our Pacific churches in Hamilton around information around contraception. And I remember the uptake wasn't great. And it was quite challenging, actually.
Yes.
But for me, a lot of those beginnings actually helped me continue into my work with Kōti Pacifica.
Yeah.
Because those relationships that I built over the years with our Pacific churches and our Pacific community through Te Rapaku Health really gave me a good grounding. And you know, also learning, because, you know, some of those challenges also transpired to, you know, people telling me off and, you know, putting me straight and all of those things. But actually, had I not had those experiences, I don't think I would have the skills today to be able to be in challenging spaces to arm myself with those things. So I'm so grateful for Te Rapaku Health and those learnings. So good. It was so good.
And you were a natural from the start, and like you talked about, service, like it naturally came with your family and the work that you did. So did you always think to yourself you were heading that way into local governance, into that pathway of public service?
No. I think I watched my parents, and I absolutely loved how they served.
Totally.
Yeah, I loved how they served, and I loved being with people. I loved how we were raised.
Yeah.
That while, you know, even some part of my life, I was left at home with all of my siblings and the extras, while my mum and dad were able to, you know, do the serving in the community. But as I got older, you know, I didn't know it was training ground for me, but I literally was in the shadow of my parents, and that's how they taught me. And so I caught that passion, or I caught what my parents had, which was really just loving to serve the people and helping as much as they could. And I mean, I'm one of nine, and then, you know, my dad's, you know, he's got 12 brothers and sisters, and my mum's got 10. So the extended family's huge.
Yeah.
So we, like, I never remembered our house empty ever. There was always people coming. It was like a train station that, you know, and we were, you know, people would stay. And so our home was a training ground, but, like, I only realised that as an adult, how those experiences really impacted local government and governance. I think came a little bit later when I realised my voice could help influence, because I noticed that maybe a lot of people thought that Pacific people were passive and too respectful and, you know, would have, you know, have some input, but only when they were asked.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes out of the way that we behave, sometimes it's translated a little bit different if you're non-Pacific, maybe. I don't know. But I think getting into those spaces, I don't think I actually, like, yeah, that's what I want to do.
Mm.
I think everything I've done has come from a passion of loving people and wanting to see the best and make sure their voice is heard. And we don't have to unite as such, because everyone's got a unique voice, right? But I think if people have the courage to speak what is on their mind, and also to have the respect that sometimes maybe your point of view might be not the same as everybody else, so have the ability to listen, read the room, and maybe this time I'll just keep my opinions to myself.
Yeah.
So being able to have a balance like that, I think, is really important. Yeah, I think when I think about the different spaces that are that have been opened to me,
totally.
Yeah, I didn't have a plan, Gladys, really, when I think about it.
Yeah.
My only plan really was, because the advice that our parents gave us was, do better than me. And so we knew what was the standard because of how our parents, you know, brought us up in our village.
Yeah.
So when I kind of keep thinking, in particular my dad, do better than me, I'm thinking, I'm still trying to be better than him, you know. I don't even feel like I'm, you know, can be in the same, you know, realm as him. But yeah, it's like I still have that as an encouragement.
Totally.
Yeah, so I wondered sometimes when you think of our people and the migration story and how, I want to say, what is it, must be nearly 8 decades ago when our people started coming to Aotearoa, how that has landed for our people here, you know, and that migration story, because what I was told, you know, from my grandparents and parents is they wanted to come because they were told they would get, it would be a better life. But I also know that in the same breath that if they could have this better life here to then better the island back home,
take it back home,
then that would be all worth it.
Yeah.
So when I think, you know, 8 decades ago our people started coming, how is that helping our island nations now when, you know, we've been here?
Yeah.
So that, I've been thinking a lot about that lately. You know, is it time for the tide to change? Is it my generation's responsibility? Or am I encouraging my children, my grandchildren?
Yeah.
But it is something that I've been thinking a lot lately. How do I honour, you know, my grandparents and parents, that we keep hearing it's a sacrifice because they've left their, what they know, to bring about a better life. But I've been thinking about that lately. Sorry, I just went all over the planet and around the Pacific and back.
That's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. And I always thought Hampshire, and led by, you know, Reverend Cora and your parents, and, you know, the late Pōkō as well, was you were tackling issues that weren't always necessarily, you know, like you talked about it, they were taboo, you know. Yeah. We're talking about, you know, sexual health and education. But I always thought, man, this is our organisation, this is our Pacifica community, Cook Island community, who were tackling, you know, some really hard issues. And, you know, over the years, in your experience, in your time, are the issues that impact Pacific people, like in Hamilton, how different are they to those, say, like here in Auckland or anywhere else around the country, if that makes sense? Sorry if I've gone off a tangent
Yeah, most definitely Hampshire has been a huge part of my life. I think I was my dad's, because Dad was the president for many years, over 40 years, I believe. Wow. But he, I believe he was coaching me to support him, but in a way that, you know, the gaps he had in regards to minute taking and how to facilitate a meeting and all of those things, which I was learning, you know, at school, or the different, you know, groups that I was involved in, from sports clubs to, you know, community groups. I was just picking up these skills and supporting, you know, Dad that way. But compared to, like, because Hampshire's would be close to 60 years now,
jeez,
in establishment, and then you've got the Cook Islands Development Agency New Zealand, which I believe, I should know this as the chair, but which I believe is probably close to 20 or over 20 years too. I do see it as, you know, the experience that I bring from Hampshire and that local knowledge Waikato-wide is definitely different to when I've come to Auckland. It's a bigger type of community. Not to say that the issues I feel are pretty much the same, or the challenges that we have as people. Our language is, you know, is struggling. You know, I'm not a fluent speaker in my language. I know that it's one of those languages that's spoken about that needs to be nurtured. The culture is strong, I feel. I feel the culture is strong. We've got lots of, you know, gatherings that bring our people together to nurture and to practice and to showcase.
Yeah.
So I do think that on the bigger scale, when we think about our people, I do think that what the gaps are for us is that we do have a generation of us that are being born and raised in Aotearoa, and we haven't had that full immersion to what the island life is. However, our blood, our bones and everything is Cook Island Māori. But unless your parents and grandparents instilled all of those traditions and the way that you live, like in the island life, which a lot of, I was brought up like that,
yeah.
is that challenge or that gap in the way that we bring up our kids is getting further and further away. So like my son, you know, I did the very best with the knowledge that I knew to pass on to him.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's got children, our grandchildren, you know, they are Punjabi, European Māori, New Zealand Māori, Cook Island. So they've got four cultures that now we need to work out which parts of them, because it's all them, but how do we nurture that?
Right.
So they feel proud about all of those cultures.
And giving it the equal attention that it deserves.
That's right, that's right. But then if you're, like my son will only be really strong in Māori and Cook Island, and I'm not sure if his fiance will be having the same with all of her different ethnicities. So, you know, where do we get all of the other, yeah. So where I was going with that, with the challenges, I feel, is that the generation that has been brought up here in New Zealand, I do feel that there's a lot of innovation happening, you know, even with the culture and the traditions. Like, when you look at the 70s videos of our dancing compared to, like, Te Mai Vanui, you know, our big national, yeah. you know, like, it is crazy. Like, what is, it's not even the same thing you're looking at. Costumes are more vibrant, whereas compared to the 70s, you might have seen costumes that were very natural based because of the islands, you know, resources right. that you could get.
Yeah.
But here now we're making the, you know, the $2 shops and all of those fast, you know,
yeah.
you know, those types of materials which are easier to access, cheaper to make. And so you can see the differences and how it influences the way that we celebrate our culture. But whether or not it has the depth, I don't know. I don't know. Does it have the depth of the intention of why, you know, our grandparents migrated here? And how does that, you know, how does that translate into this next generation? Yeah, I don't know. I'm just asking lots of questions because these are things that I'm thinking
That's
about.
That's fantastic.
And when I think about my role as the chair of CDANS.
Yes, congratulations.
Yeah, I take it as a big responsibility
yeah.
because, one, I'm thinking I've got a platform that I can help lift our people, help influence the way we make our mark in this world, but also that how does that translate into changing people's lives for good. So, yeah, I've been a board member for a few years, I want to say 4 or 5 years, and then to be voted in as the chair, that's a big responsibility for me. I feel as a board member, you're thinking about all of the things.
Yes.
But as the chair, I feel like all the board members are looking at me like yeah.
it's on you.
Yeah.
You got this, Marita.
Yeah, and I've got an amazing board and privilege that I'm, you know, Hamish Crooks, who I took over, well, I should say my uncle, but yeah, I feel very privileged that he's close so that I can be mentored,
yeah.
you know, and still be encouraged by him and learn from him. So, yeah, that was kind of one of the reasons why I thought it was safe to step into that space. Mm-hmm. While I've been, you know, on different governing boards over the years, it is actually my first chair role. I've never really been a chair.
No.
I've really enjoyed just being secretary or a treasurer or just a board member. But so
it plays a big role. You know?
Yes, it does. But I am very motivated by the people.
Yeah,
I'm motivated by, and I want to be close to the people so that every step or everything that I'm involved with is going to impact the people in a good way. Yeah. And also I'm open to people telling me, that's dumb, why are you doing that? And I feel like, that over the years I've had people that have said, are you thinking straight or why are you doing that? And I really appreciate that because as a leader, I feel that I've been put in those positions as a leader. Like I said before, I didn't really have a plan to say I'm going to be a leader.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, anyway, that's been my experience. But what's motivated me into those leadership roles is because the people have asked or have said, you go and talk for us.
Yep.
You go and speak for us. Mm. And so that's been my reasons, really, is because I know that what I can give and serve the people will bring good. Yeah.
And talking of good, what you did and your role within Kalti Pasifika and just how that evolved, because it started around the same time as Te Rapuka Health.
Yeah.
So the fact that you've been there right from the beginning as well with, you know, Leo Pepe Peter Corrales and that, and to see that to the formation of the whale and everything. How was that?
I tell you what, I wouldn't have dreamed up that path even if I tried to.
Yeah.
Because you're so right. Like, we were a part of those funerals, Gladys. I remember going to the very first one with Mama Pita.
I think I blocked them up.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay. But I remember going as a young youth worker then, sitting in the funeral and hearing our parents' and grandparents' dreams about a space. So I remember that talanoa. I remember that funeral. I remember, you know, seeing the faces of, you know, the pride of wanting to build something that will help our people out of frustration because the main services weren't meeting our people's needs. I remember that feeling. I remember going to all of the funnels that Kaute Pasifika held, and I remember just, you know, always been a fan. I've always been a fan, even though I know when I was at Te Rapuka, I was always the one sent to go and see Mama Peta.
Yes, I remember. You go, Marita.
Yeah, so, and I loved it. Yeah. I actually, and I've got so much respect for Mama Peta. Mm. And, you know, what her dreams and her little team dreamed, you know, 25 odd years ago. And to be a part of the team to bring that to life, like, I could have never planned that. I was happy in my job at Hamilton City Council. I did 20 years there. And, you know, and because I am one of those people in the community that I was like, I had, you know, and I had gone to a lot of the submissions when then Leo Pepe Rachel brought them to the council chambers. I was sitting in the chambers when they were doing that because I was still at council cheering them on, and then, you know, where I could, I would be putting a good word into our managers at council, and, you know, I'd be advocating hard for them. And, you know, when the decision came to give Kaute Pasifika Hinnamore Park, honestly, it was
another level.
It was six yes, like councillors, six yes and six no's. And it was the mayor at that time's vote, which is Paula Southgate, her vote, which was yes.
That swung.
That's how they got Hinnamore Park. It was such
an irony. That close.
That's close. That vote at the time changed everything for Kaute Pasifika. You know, it just, and then from then on, obviously it was like a $32 million project. Yes. So, but the team at Kaute, you know, they worked hard for nearly the dream was 25 years, so that's how long they've been working. And there was a project manager role come up, and There were two, one to establish the Early Learning Centre and then one to help with the integrated services.
Yeah.
And because I know the LPP Rachel, so I was like emailing and congratulating her every step that I could, or if I'd send her a text. And so I was, you know, really a cheerleader, cheering them on. And when I had heard that they hadn't found a project manager for the integrated services, I was like, what the heck? Really? You haven't found anybody yet? And then I thought, I'll chuck my hat in the ring. I'll just chuck my hat and see what happens. Well, long story short, I got shortlisted, had an interview, and then got offered the job. It was prayerfully too, you know, my husband and I, we prayed about it because, like I said, I love my work at council, like Hamilton Council. It was just like, I was there 20 years and I was leading an amazing community advisors team. I was literally wasn't looking for a job. So this kind of was like a little bit, it interrupted my spirit, and like I took notice, applied, and then got offered the job.
Full circle.
And honestly, like, it was such a privilege. Because like I said, the voices and the faces of all of our community at that very first Pono, it just sat with me all those years.
Yeah.
And then to be given the opportunity to come and give my gifts and talents to help bring the village to life, what a privilege. Huge. What a privilege.
And I remember the opening, and I remember thinking, this is Hamilton.
Yeah.
Like, you did it.
Yeah.
I actually did it from, you know, King Street to Frankton, and I thought, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Here it is.
And you know, you bring up a good point that Kotia hasn't really had like 100% support from our Pacifica community in the Waikato. Yeah. I can be honest about that. Yeah. I mean, even I knew that not being in Kotia, but even joining Kotia, there was always kind of like what I would name them, like the haters. But I think I look at that, I think about that, and I think, yeah, because sometimes our Pacific people have been so used to being disappointed, you know?
Mm.
And I think, you know, when we've had organisations, or not even organisations, just in life in general, we try to work hard, we try to get ahead, and then we get disappointed, right? And then there is always that, it's better to just like, oh, well, welcome that disappointment, because actually it won't hurt as much. Maybe that's why we have that attitude. I don't know, but it's when I think about KT's journey, I think about, you know, my parents, my grandparents, and just everybody that has migrated. I think about them because who would have thought an organization could move differently to provide a space for our Pacific people in Waikato, in the heart of the city.
Yeah.
Opposite FMG Stadium in the heart of the city. And, you know, we had to, this was like non-negotiable, to make sure that we walked alongside our mana whenua and our people, our Māori people, because they don't have a space in the middle of city. We knew that right from the beginning, and we needed to have their blessings. And we did. Yeah. We got their blessings. We worked hard to get that blessing.
Yeah.
And it didn't just happen like in a week.
No.
It's been years walking alongside our mana whenua, helping us guide. Even when Kotia Pacifica was putting their submission in, they had already done a lot of work to build that relationship with mana whenua. It was important to get that relationship embedded and make sure that we were honouring that, because we realised what a privilege it was to be on Hinamoa Park, and you know, the history is stolen, you know, and to be there. But one thing, when I came on board and I had a look at the resource consent, and I was just going through all the paperwork, and then I was so encouraged to read that 100-odd years ago a Cook Islands pine was planted on Hinamoa Park. And when I read that,
meant
I was like, we've always been here and we were meant to be in Hinamoa Park. Because who would have designed that?
Yep.
Cook Islands pine The Pacific people were meant to be there, and it's still there today. It survived the construction. So the Cook Islands pine is right, that big pine tree, right by the whale out the front. That is a Cook Islands pine. It's a protected tree. And so in a way I feel very like, oh, that's so cool. There's a Cook Islands pine here. We've got, you know, the whale that, you know, that Samoans and Tongans and a lot of our people, you know, recognise. Mm-hmm. And then you think about our wellness centre, which was a bowling club, but we just gutted everything out.
Yeah.
And it's just designed perfectly for our people. And then our early learning centre built for 80 tamariki. Like, early learning centre. It's an amazing space.
Yeah.
And the challenge now is to keep it relevant, to keep it upholding the values for our Pacifica people. And, you know, Kaitiā Pacifica is doing a fantastic job in the use of the whale. It's a huge, huge building.
Yeah. Oh.
And it's a beautiful, iconic, building for our city. And it's encouraging to hear that all walks of life are using it.
Nice.
It's just not our Pacific community using it, all walks of life. We've had, you know, the Waikato Rugby Awards there, we've had graduations, we've had weddings, we've had 21sts, we've also had, this was in my time, and then we've also had funerals as well. So we've had
well utilised.
Lots of commercial, like, big events that, you know, that have hosted, because the whale is a beautiful space.
Oh,
and
it is.
And the spirit of the place, because I do believe it's because of the prayers of our, you know, Mama Peta and the people that had prayed for this place. It's that spirit exists within the village. So, yeah, it was a privilege, Gaz, to be a part of that project.
Yeah. And you're still there, and like you talked about, the spirit is strong.
Mm.
And your community advocacy wasn't just there, it was also with Hamsir and the, you know, Cook Island community. And then I saw this amazing project that you were a part of. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the Surf?
Yes,
Amazing. Still going strong?
Still going strong, yes. We currently, we've put in a bid with Go Eco, which is another non-profit who, one of their things they do is rescue kai from supermarkets so that, you know, good kai that can still be eaten. So we have partnered with them to put in a submission to council, because council's got this renewal of community facilities. So our trusts have joined together and put in a bid for one of them. So, yeah, the server's been going for 11 years. So me and my family have been a part of it for 10 years. And so our night, it was Wednesday night, and we would come together, provide all the food, cook the food, and do 60 to 100 meals every Wednesday. So my family still do that while I'm not there.
Yeah.
Our family's still involved there. Paki and I have committed to every second Sunday, we will go down and coordinate that on Sunday.
Okay.
And I'm a trustee on that serve trust. So, yeah, it's awesome. We absolutely love it. It's like an hour. That's all it takes. Like, it's not much.
Yep.
Well, I think it's not much to serve the community. Unfortunately, the demand is getting high. There's a lot more people. You know, we've, you know, families, you know, with children. The demand, when you look at it, it's, you know, saddens me that, you know, in a country where I think there's an excess of food, but there's a blockage in the system somewhere that we've got families and people that are going without, like, yes, something's not right.
I agree. I was fortunate to do some voluntary work with Food Fair. It was part of the Young Onset Dementia Program.
Mm-hmm.
And the volume of food that was coming through, I mean, fantastic to the supermarkets with all this excess food, but in my, you know, in my two cents opinion, I couldn't understand how we've got a problem here with people not being able to access food. And it was daily, the truckloads of food. I don't get it. Maybe I'm missing something, but I was like, why?
Yeah, I mean, why have we got organisations that are risking good food anyway in the first place?
Yeah.
When really, why doesn't the supermarkets just sell it really cheaply instead of putting it in the dump, you know, like, So it's a system thing, I think, Gladys. There's a system that is broken somewhere. You know, we've got our school lunches that is broken. We've got food coming out of our ears and people are having to sometimes beg for food. And, I just don't understand. The servers are part, we know, that is a part of a ecosystem because the food system isn't great, but we're a part of that system in Waikato that there's a collective called the Kai Collective. So it's anybody that's kind of involved with serving the community and giving free kai. We're a part of that collective. Okay. So sometimes when there's some food that's going to get thrown away and it's a bulk lot,
right,
pallets, like I'm talking pallets of carrots, pallets of potatoes, we'll be a recipient of that, but then we'll hook into the collective, hey, we've got three pallets of carrots, but, you know, we need to get them out. And so the collective's a really good way to, you know, share the resource when we get it. Otherwise, it goes in the landfill.
Crazy. And
yes.
I must admit,
Bread is something that blows my mind.
Yeah.
We're one recipient that gets kai, but bread alone, we would get daily 15 to 20 black rubbish bags full of bread.
Yeah, it's fresh bread.
It's fresh. There's nothing wrong with it.
No.
So I know that there's a whole lot of consumerism behaviours, you know, behind that because the supermarkets say, you know, people won't buy stuff if the shelves are empty. So a lot of these supermarkets are just creating bread because the shelves need to be full. But that's dummy. Like, isn't that wasting money?
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's election year if you politicians are listening.
Yes.
Come on.
Yeah.
Got some ideas
here. There's a system there that somebody that's really smart with systems needs to innovate there and create something a bit better for our community.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you're continuing to do that. So with all the work that you do, to get a break. What does a break look like for Marita?
Oh, yeah, I get a break. You know, God bless me with a husband who is really good at chilling out.
Nice.
So over the last 10 years of our marriage, he's taught me so much about having a break and chilling out and that it's okay not to have to plan every day because I'm a bit of a planner and I'm a bit of a... Yeah, I am a little bit notorious about planning ahead and my husband Pucky is very much chilled and like today we had no plan except for I kept reminding him, don't forget we got this, you know. And
very grateful.
Yes, and he is really chilled. So I'm learning to just, you just chill and just flow. So a break for me is if I plan it, I love to travel with my family. So we saved really hard last year and we took my son and his and our mukos with my mom and my sister and her family. We all went on a Disney cruise.
Oh, nice.
And that was really cool. A little bit extravagant for me, like I kind of think, but actually our grandchildren absolutely loved it. And I did really nothing, just eat, play, sleep, and enjoy what Disney provided. It was just really beautiful. I love to travel. I think travel is my thing.
Nice.
And I love to cook. So anything around food, from growing it to preparing it to cooking and sharing it, that's a break to me too. So I love doing that stuff,
I still remember your mum, Ede, watching her make the mayonnaise in the kitchen. And I was just like, wow. And I just remember, I should have been in the office, but I was busy watching your mum make the mayonnaise. And just...
She's still a champion of doing that.
She's still going strong. And
she's an amazing lady, my mum, you know, 73. She's not afraid of technology. She's so good.
Ah.
Yeah, she knows how to do a messenger call. She does all her internet banking. She's, you know, she can go from her phone to her tablet device very seamlessly. She's still volunteering in our church office, does the PowerPoint for Sunday. She's so busy.
Nice.
And plus still has time for all of her kids, her grandchildren and her great-grandchildren and her own siblings, because she comes up to Auckland and hangs out with her sister.
Yes.
And then she'll pop over to Melbourne to see our little baby brother. She's, you know, and her sister there. She's very active. So we love keeping her active. We, you know, when we get to those types of ages, we want our people to be strong.
Yep.
And healthy and thriving. Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, when I look at my mum, I think, yeah, that's a great example of how you need to be living, you know. And she just chills too. Like, she's just chills at home. She's, you know, she's hooked into her Netflix and her, I think she enjoys Korean, those soaps and happy K-pop.
Thumb up there from gas.
Yeah. So, you know, she loves that. She's not a, yes. She's really embraced when you think about how much the world is so different when she came to New Zealand as a 13-year-old from the little island of Palmerston. She arrived to Auckland, 13.
13.
And you just think of all the changes, you know. There's heaps, hey, heaps of changes. 60 years there's been heaps of changes in our world.
And you talked about that. You talked about the journey that your parents, your grandparents came. And your mum is living proof.
Oh, you know? I doubt. Yeah.
That's just like that, you know, investment, the prayers, the blessing, serving the community. Your mum is living proof, like, you know, yeah. And it's so encouraging. I like how you said it is about, you know, living longer but having that quality to be able to do what, you know, it is doing, traveling, exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, we want to keep them, you know, as living as, you know, we all know we've got a time to go. And when that time goes, but we need to be living life well. Yeah. And I know that as Pacific people, we're really, you know, overrepresented negatively in the health, you know, stats. And so we've got to help ourselves too, you know. Like, I know we gather a lot and we have big feasts and, you know, so we've got to help ourselves, you know. Like, Pucky and I have been on a bit of a journey. You know, our motto is, you know, eat less, eat good, and move more. So, you know, we're trying that as part of our life. You know, we don't want to be, I don't want to be having muscles and things like that. I just want to make sure that I can move when I'm like 80 and I'm living well. That's my goal, you know. I don't want to be bedridden. I mean, most of our lives we've been looking after our grandparents, you know, until they pass. Yeah. And a lot of the time, you know, we watch them become different people who they weren't, you know. And I don't know if that's living well, you know. Yeah, they're there, but it's, I don't know if it's living well. And so I've got two examples of, you know, what living well looks like when you're growing old and what doesn't, you know. So want to take that into my future as well and be an example for my kids and my grandchildren. I love being Grammy.
Yeah, you're Grammy?
Yeah, I'm nice. Grammy. And Pucky is Pa-Pucks. We just like...
love it.
We love it. It's one of our biggest blessings, I feel, that...
How many grandchildren are
Well, we've got four.
You've got four, right.
Yeah, with my son. But Pucky raised... a few of his late sister's children when she passed. And so, you know, they're having children now too. So we call them our mukuls as well. And I'm probably going to get it mixed up, but I think there is 13 of them. Because, yeah, there were six of the children that he helped raise. And I could be wrong if there's 13, but I remember counting, thinking 13's the number. But, yeah, and so... Yeah, I think it's a different feeling. I think when you become a grandparent, or even a parent, but a grandparent is a bit of a different feel. My first grandson, my son's fiance just let me be in the room when delivery room, which I felt very privileged. But when I held Elijah George, that's his name, I kept looking at him, looking at Marque, my son, and looking at my grandson, and Marque goes, "What's the matter, Mom?" And I said, "Oh, you know how much I love you, eh, son?" And he was like, "Of course." And I said, "No, you do, don't you?" And he was like, "Of course, Mum, why?" "Oh, well, I think I love this baby more than you." And he was like, "Oh, sad, Mum." And I said, "I know, it's just happened instantly. I don't know what this is."
There's the facts.
Yeah.
Right there.
So that happens every time now for the new baby.
Marque's like, "Here we go."
Yeah, but his nana, his dad's mum, always reminds me, "Marque is number one." And I'm like, "Okay, for you." No.
For me, it's...
Elijah George.
No. Elijah anyway. George.
Yeah.
Your role as grandmother, daughter, wife, auntie, niece, friend, colleague, confidant, you are now in these senior positions, and it's led you to this. You've got people who are looking up to you, and they are aspiring to be you, where you're at. What would you say to them?
I struggle to hear that question a little bit, Gladys, just because, yeah, I think I haven't thought about people looking up to me because I'm pretty short. No.
I mean, I have to say that whenever I hear about events in the community and the wider, you know, governance, Cook Island community and beyond, your name always comes up.
Oh.
And I'm always like, "I know her."
Yeah.
It's my claim to fame.
Yes, it is. Okay. So I was thinking, for me, you have to be authentically yourself. I know I've heard lots of people say that.
Yep.
But I think our people need to stay connected to themselves and who they are, but to each other and to culture. I feel there are lots of opportunities out there at the moment. I do feel it's a challenge for our young people because there's so much opportunity that I'm seeing, like a little bit of paralysed young people, that it's easier to sit on the couch or behind a game or on a device, that I'm seeing this kind of lack of wanting to take up opportunities because I feel like it can be a bit overwhelming,
yeah,
seeing the opportunities. And actually, I think it's easier for me to just chill out. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, so I do think that our people, we need to be courageous to create, to innovate, and to interrupt. We need to be encouraged, I think, to interrupt in spaces where maybe people don't expect us to interrupt, and not to interrupt to cause conflict, but interrupt because it's good to interrupt something that's normal, that actually shouldn't be normal. And sometimes I know that it can be uncomfortable to do that, but if you've got a platform to do that, then you should. And that is probably my encouragement is, yeah, be authentic, stay connected, know who you are, and be courageous to interrupt. I know as Pacific people we use the word respect a lot, and, you know, sometimes people use respect against you. No.
Yeah.
But
it happens.
Yeah, it happens. But I think there's different levels of respect too, that sometimes your level of respect is actually disrespecting me. And sometimes to explain that or to try and express that in a way that you're not going to build conflict between a person, but they need to understand that.
Yeah.
And I know as Pacific, which all of our Pacific nations, when we're in Aotearoa, we've been lumped together and called Pacific. But I know you're Samoan and I'm Cook Island. We have friends that are Tongan.
Yep.
There are Niueans, Tuvalu, Fiji. We are very different.
Mm.
And so to complement each other in a way, in a world where Aotearoa lumps us together as Pacific, we have every right to be a Cook Islander, even though I get lumped as Pacific, and just as much as you've got to be Samoan. But I feel sometimes we get lumped together, and then whoever the domineering Pacific nation is,
label.
Yeah, we get labelled as that. And, you know, I found myself, even working at Kotea, that, you know, the Samoan, because that's the majority of, you know, the nation at Kotea, I found myself really advocating strong for the smaller nations. And I said, yes, that's what respect looks like for you, Samoan, but actually, let's hear from the Kiripati community. Because actually, I think that might be really offensive to that nation. So we need to find a common ground.
Yeah.
How do we do that? And I think we need to stay open to that as Pacific people, that we don't lump ourselves just because that's what Aotearoa has forced us to do. And because, I'm going to go on another tangent there, but it's I think staying connected, being authentic to yourself, practice your culture, learn your language as much as you can, and interrupt kindly.
And I don't want to interrupt this conversation.
Yes.
What exciting events have you got coming up? What's got you going? Ooh.
Okay.
What's happening?
So work-wise, I suppose, you know, I'm still learning. Franklin is such a big area. But we just had the Franklin Schools Career Expo the other day, which was just blew my mind. And awesome. That's why I'm reminded about opportunities. It's been out in the public about, so if I talk about CDANs, we've had an awesome meeting with the Prime Minister of the Cook Islands.
Nice.
So, yeah, watch the space. I think there's going to be some really cool things that are going to impact our community positively, as well as back home in the islands. Personally, our fourth Mukor was born 29 weeks, so I'm looking forward to him coming home because he's still in hospital in Waikato. And every day, you know, I get 3-4 photos, and we've had 3 visits with him, and he's growing so well, so I'm looking forward to him coming home.
And going home, all great things must come to an end. I could just sit here and listen to Marie to, Gaz. But we are just so grateful for this opportunity to hear about your wonderful journey that, you know, long may it continue.
It's still, yes, amen to that, because I'm still growing.
Absolutely. The last word, Marita.
Last word? Thank you. Thank you. And I think I've said heaps of words, but thank you, Gladys, and all the best. And I hope it's not the last time we catch up. Let's catch up again soon.
Yes, please. Yes, please. Marita, and to also your husband, thank you so much for being here with us. And please, this isn't the end.
Mm.
It's been great. Me taki mata, Marita, and thank you so much for tuning in to PW Live. Here's Mai Rara Tonga, right here, Pasifika Wai.
The sandy beach, the breaking sound of the waves, the smiling faces, Mai Rara Tonga, my island paradise. I want to come back to you. Stay here, toku kainga, toku reo tukuna. Where is my homeland now? My voice of home.